Welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club. My name is Matt Harrington. I am your host, and we are going to be talking all about ABA research. In this podcast, we break down one ABA research article per episode, taking out the key findings for you so that on your morning commute or on your way into work, you can become a better behavior analyst. Now, let's get to the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club. We are continuing through the essential readings article, the readings that you need to know and have read to become an amazing behavior analyst. Of course, in my opinion, everything is my opinion. It's my podcast. Surprise, it's my opinion. Let's talk about this next article by Cicero in 2021. Behavioral ethics, ethical practice is more than memorizing compliance codes. Now, I specifically searched out a new ethical article because I have been faced over and over again, it seems, over the last 2 to 3 months with ethical dilemmas, both for myself and for supervisees that I work with. I had a supervisee ask me what to do if his manager is fraudulently billing. I had a supervisee ask me their RBT wasn't listening to them and could doing the completely opposite thing. What should they do? In my own experience, I've worked with companies that I don't think are very ethical and that presents a lot of challenges trying to be an ethical BCBA in an unethical environment, specifically some of the ones we're going to talk about here. And so I went on the journey to try and find a good seminal article to give you a stepping off point to evaluate ethics for yourself. And that is the first and let's say primary key takeaway I need you to take from this article and this podcast. Ethics are personal. We have a compliance code. We have a set of rules and guidelines, but that does not mean that there are black and white ethical violations or non-violations. And we see this in the code all the time. Let's take something like dual relationships, right? You should not be in a dual relationship. A mother cannot be the RBT to her daughter. But maybe they can if there's no other service providers and they put important barriers in place and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right? This is what I'm talking about. There are clear-cut situations, and then there are exceptions. And so what that leaves us with, is this an ethical violation or is it not? And oftentimes it comes down to intent. And intent is something that us behavior analysts really hate because you don't really know somebody's intent. You can just observe the way they're behaving. However, what this article talks about and what I would argue for is that intent is just another way to say function. And how do we identify a function of a behavior? We can do a functional analysis where we observe the behavior happening or not happening under a variety of different conditions. That's not really something that's possible in ethical situations. We want to say, do it again. Do the ethical violation again. Instead, we can observe it based on the environmental determinants and factors involved. And this is what this article talks about, is looking at the environment around a behavior, assessing the contingencies that may or may not be in play, and then determining function slash intent from there, which then guides, is this a violation or not? Now, is this perfect? No. Is this the last ethical paper that should ever be published? Definitely not. In fact, Cicero goes through a really solid 12-step checklist in this article that serves as a great guideline that I'm not even going to talk about in this article other than mentioning it so you can check it out yourself, because we don't want ethical behavior to be regulated to a checklist because it's always too complex. Now, decision-making models help, and that's why I do encourage you to check this one out. But instead, I want to focus on the conceptual ideas of tracking intent and what we can find as behavior analysts as we move forward to evaluating, is this an ethical behavior or not? So what are these key concepts, these key kind of intent metrics that we need to think about? There's a few of them. The first one is that self-serving bias slash reinforcement concept. So people behave in ways that benefit themselves. Big shocker to us behavior analysts, right? We're all looking for reinforcement. Ethical behavior, on the other hand, oftentimes goes unnoticed and the reinforcement doesn't occur. So let's talk about speeding for a second. So you're driving your kid to school, you're running a little late, you press the gas pedal a little hard, and you're going 60 in a 45. That is a, quote, unethical behavior because of the rules that we've all agreed to when living in this society. However, you know what? That's actually a really complicated situation with the ethics and the rules and stuff like that. But just work with me here. However, what happens as a result of that speeding behavior? You probably get your kid to school on time and you get reinforcement. Now, what happens if you drive the speed limit? You kid is late, you have to park, get out of the car, it turns into a whole thing. There's probably some punishment contingencies there, or at least there's an absence of reinforcement. So the first thing to think about when you're examining a behavior and setting up your environment for strong ethical behavior is you need to know to reinforce ethical behavior, right? We need to make sure that it's not just unethical behavior leading to reinforcement, but also ethical. Next, we start thinking about incrementalism or shaping plus habituation. Big ethical breaches oftentimes start small, a pattern of minor unethical actions that when either reinforced or not punished or ignored in the most cases, can gradually escalate without even the awareness of the person doing it. Let's talk about fraudulent billing, for example. Now, there are big fraudulent billing practices. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about the smaller ones, the stuff that makes our field look bad and 100% need to stop, but also happen all the time. These are things like, okay, we have 7 minutes to do our note at the end of session. Okay, then they start ending session 10 minutes early and then doing their note, and then 15 minutes early and then doing their note. And then this note is particularly long. It was a really hard session. So they're actually going to pause 30 minutes early and start doing their note then. This is an example of this shaping and habituation of an unethical practice that over time leads to something very significant, which is, of course, the loss of services because a note is being written. And there are other examples here that you could go to in terms of, you know, adding some extra time here, taking some extra time away, to even more clinical situations where you're supervising maybe too much just to hit your billable requirement or not enough because you're too busy. The more often you're put in that situations and no contingencies come out of it, the more often you'll do it in the future. Ethical or unethical behavior leads to a consequence. We want to make sure it's a consequence that promotes ethical behavior. That's the key concept here. 80 CEUs, $10 a month, 3 to 5 new CEUs being added every single month. Straightforward, simple, that's CEU streamlined. I created the Netflix of CEUs with all of not only my old content, but 3 to 5 new hours of CEUs being added every single month. Right now, we're at 85 videos and climbing more and more with over 400 behavior analysts getting all of the CEUs they could dream about for only $10 a month. So if you're interested, go ahead and go to behavioristbookclub.com and click the link that says Streamline Info or check the link below this episode. I know that you will love it and I guarantee you that you will get all the CEUs you need at finally an affordable price. Next, we can think about framing and motivational operations. So how a problem is described changes the way people behave. So when you look at an ethical conundrum, it's worthwhile to look at the actual language that's being used and then see if that's influencing your decision or influencing the intent of the person who may have made the ethical error. For example, a non-compliant parent versus families with barriers. Two situations that describe the same thing with two separate connotations. When someone comes to you or you observe a potential ethical error, and you look at the framing of the way they're talking about it, look at the framing that you're receiving it, and you might have an insight into their intent. If they're talking all about how awful these parents are and how they're not supporting the intervention, they're not supporting the treatment and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it might be worthwhile to cut through the noise and realize this person has framed these caregivers in a negative light, which then is serving to justify this behavior. Does that make it unethical or does that make it more or less ethical? No, it's still unethical, but you can start to see how that ethical behavior appeared so that in the future, you can tackle it ahead of time. Creating an environment that reinforces ethical behavior is not about preventing every single ethical mishap. It's reducing the probability that ethical mishaps are going to happen. The last, or almost the last one, conformity bias and social reinforcement. People are going to match the behavior to the overall group, especially the quote unquote in-group. And if unethical behavior is normalized, that's when you're going to see more ethical behavior. Training alone isn't enough. We need actual contextual assessment to start to see changes in behavior at a group scale. ProSocial is a great example of this. There's a CEU and CEU Streamline that talks all about that by Jason Stauffer, a fantastic conversation. But at a very simple level, you hear business owners all the time talk about like cliques, right? Of these RBTs all hang out together. And these are the cool RBTs and these are the not cool RBTs. Same with BCBAs. And I know in all of my different jobs, there was in-groups and out-groups and things like that. It's just how humans end up organizing. It's not good, but it's the way it works. Look at the different groups. First off, try and make one group, the actual culture, the people, the whole company culture, but also look to see what kind of behavior is happening within those groups. Is it ethical? Is it unethical? If it's unethical, you have a problem on your hands. And that's something that needs to be fixed before anything else, or you're just going to get cascading unethical behavior no matter how much training you provide. And finally, the overconfidence bias, or rather the lack of discriminative stimuli. People believe they're ethical, right? In almost every case, even in clear violations that I've had to confront and report, every single person has believed they're in the right. And not just in the right in terms of they have a justification for it, but in the right in like they truly, with their whole chest, believe that there is no ethical violation happening here. Sometimes that comes from that justification error that we've seen in the other situations, but sometimes that just comes from not knowing that something is unethical or seeing the warning signs. I had RBTs who, when I was working in home, I would warn them, all right, when you're in home, you're a part of their life. So be conscious of the dual relationships. Be aware that they're probably going to feel more comfortable with you than basically anyone else. You're going to be in their bubble. And be aware that you still have to be that professional therapist. And then 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later maybe, I hear from the RBT, it's, oh yeah, it was so great. It was so fun to be part of that family movie. And I'm like, wait a second. Tell me more about this family movie. Was it during session? Were we working on something? What did that end up looking like? And to you and me as BCBAs who have experience in home, a family movie is probably starting to blur the line between dual relationships. Now, there are plenty of situations where family movies is a completely valid and socially acceptable goal that we should be working on. But as you start to see these things pile up, somebody who is very attuned to these discriminative stimuli are going to recognize we're on that track. We're hitting up to that dual relationship point to be concerned about. Someone who's totally new to ABA is definitely not going to see that. And the reason I point this all out is because there are times when you need to set up your environment to promote ethical behavior, and there's also training moments that need to happen. And things like dual relationships, oftentimes is going to be a training moment, right? With that, these are the signs that we're moving in that direction. This is what I need you to do after it. Okay, what are the key takeaways? The first one, an aside, you should really check out this article and check out the decision tree as well. We didn't have time to get into it today, but it's a great tool to use and at least as a jumping off point in terms of evaluating intent. But the biggest takeaway is that ethics aren't black and white, and it's not yes or no. It is let's examine the environment and look at the intent and then make decisions based off that as well as the actual environment. When you're setting up and trying to contrive a highly ethical environment, there are things that you need to do as an owner, as a manager, such as reinforcing ethical behavior, consistently pointing out and teaching on unethical behavior, and making it so ultimately everybody is on the same page in terms of culture and what is ethical for this business and what is not. These are all things on an organizational-wide level that you can do to promote ethical behavior, and you need to do so that you don't have cascading over and over again unethical behavior, which is ultimately just going to really challenge your business. All right, everyone, that is our Friday episode of the podcast. I hope you have a great day. I hope you enjoy that article and check it out for yourself. I will see you in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. I hope you learned something, and I hope you continue to learn something as you tune in Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays to the Behaviorist Book Club. If you liked this episode, consider leaving us a review, sharing it with a friend, and most importantly, using it in your clinical practice. There's no other reason why I do this than to make you a better behavior analyst and to make myself a better clinician. See you in the next one.